We're treating the world to come, spiraling in time, dreaming alive, dreaming alive, dreaming the world to come, dreaming alive, dreaming alive, can we hear our song?
Hi everyone, I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nomi.
And this is our bonus special episode.
We want to give folks some history and updates about this project and what we foresee for the future. And so, Rebecca, I'm wondering if you could just explain to folks, what was the idea for this project, for Dreaming the World to Come, when you first thought of it? Because I think this started as your idea.
Yeah. Well, I had been making these moon calendars for years and really interested as a Capricorn, interested in the calendar and cycles. And I had talked to several people over the years, like, this is something that I'm interested in doing, and never really came together. And then you and I had started collaborating together, teaching workshops specifically around the elements and Jewish mysticism and magic. And of course, the elements are deeply connected to the seasons. I think I was just wanting to collaborate with you more. I mean, those workshops had ended and we were interested in continuing to do work together.
Yeah, and you know, just a way to kind of call together voices of people that we really respect and create more access to Jewish magical teachings and help us connect to the Jewish flow of time.
Yeah, the other big part of it that is a really substantial or meaningful part of our connection is around dreaming specifically. It's something over the years that we've often told each other our dreams and given each other feedback about our dreams, and that we both work a lot in the sleeping dream realm. We're both also artists and creators, and so we're also these daydreamers in a way of creating worlds through our work and building community. And that seems like a really almost the core of what brought us together. And the planner was a means to explore that more.
I just feel like so much of my magical practice going back to being a kid is around time and how to navigate time within. I mean, I don't think I was thinking of it this way as a child, but capitalist institutional structures. And like as a little kid, I remember I would always set my clock for weird times. Like when I would set an alarm, it was always like my clock would be set like 9 minutes fast and my alarm would go off at like 6:49. But I really did think of it at the time as like, there's another reality out there or in here that is not so regimented.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have access to that. So I'm just doing this almost as a placeholder to remind myself that there are other realities. And I feel like that's one of the things that's been most helpful for me about the planner is it's not just a mental thing of translating, oh, well, what's the Hebrew date as opposed to the Gregorian date? It's like actually builds it into my flow of time that like, well, today is this day on the Hebrew calendar. The day starts in the evening. Here's the Torah portion happening this week. Like there's this whole other world of time that's connected both to like this long lineage and also just to the literal land and my body. And so, yeah, that's something I just really value about having a tool for navigating both of those calendars together.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, it felt so natural that the Hebrew year began with the school year. So I always oriented on some psychological level, like the beginning of the year is in September when school starts. And then this descent into darkness and the seeding time. Yeah, we picked certain calendar days to include and certain ones not to include intentionally to move away from capitalism.
And colonization.
Yeah, colonization. And I think that's another point of connection that we share is this holding of multiple realities and interest in that, and that holding the stories of the Torah throughout the year, holding the cycle of the moon, holding the different calendars, as you were talking about, that really resonates with me. And being able to then track my subconscious life on the pages of the calendar and see how the stories in my dreams, you know, echo the seasons or the holidays or the moon cycle as well.
And is that what you mostly do in your planner? You're like writing your dreams and observations and...
Well, I have two. I use two planners. Uh-huh. One is purely a dream journal. And I'll also note important events, but I won't really reflect on them. I have a separate journal. But yeah, really for a dream realm and things that happen in waking life that are connected to dreaming life. And then I have another one I use just to kind of track my work life, for keeping lists of things to work on that day. And through the course of us making this planner, the 3 years we've been working on it, I have had some really big changes in my neurological life and have started taking different supplements and diet stuff. And so it's actually the first time in my life where I've created lists and be able to check them off and finish them, which is a huge part of even being able to work on this project. Yeah. Because I don't know if you've noticed that over the years, but I have gotten more organized the last 3 years, and it's really enabled me to participate in different ways.
Mm-hmm. That's in awesome. Life. I'm not sure if I was tracking that, but it resonates. Yeah. I have my Indwelling Dreams planner next to my bed where I write my dreams, and then I have one right here next to me that I don't really write in. I just use it to check dates, and I do that like almost constantly, many times a week. I'm like, what's happening that week? What celebrations are happening? What Torah portion? You know, I have bar mitzvah students and just reasons I need to know these things. And I find it very helpful to be able to be like, oh yeah, and the moon will be in this cycle at that time. And, you know, not having to just like check a million different websites to try to figure it out. I'm like, oh, I have all the most significant things that matter to me already right here that I can just look at.
It's nice to not look at your phone all the time too.
Yes, it
having
is.
Having a paper copy.
Yeah.
I realize we didn't even say, like, why we're doing this special episode.
Well, we kind of did.
Yeah?
Yeah, what else do you want to say?
Well, just wanted to say that, you know, we want to honor this work that we've done with the planner, because we're not going to be making the planner again this year.
Yeah, that's the big announcement.
That's the big announcement.
I mean, yeah. And we've been, you know, kind of holding that close to our chest and trying to figure out how things are going. But it does seem true that we're not doing it again, at least not this next year. We have a theme for the next year. We have possible contributors for the next year. Like, we've been really excited about it. And there are just a lot of logistics, including that we've never really been able to pay ourselves for this work. You know, we've here and there been able to pay ourselves chunks of money, but it's been a job, and we've been mostly doing it for free for the past 3 years. And then also the worldwide paper shortage has been a real issue, and just being able to do it in a schedule, because you have to make a planner to be ready for the year. You know, you can't just do it whenever. So it was getting so that in order to have it in time, we would have to have all the content ready at a point that is just logistically not possible for us. And, you know, we were looking into some like print on demand options, but even just, yeah, the financial aspects of it is just too much for us right now.
Yeah. And we're really committed to printing locally, and the local printers that we've worked with are just, they're really backed up and are not able to produce the way that they used to be since the pandemic. So, and that's part of why it was an expensive project, because we wanted it to get printed locally, like near where we're from.
And we wanted it to be really beautiful in these specific ways. You know, we chose the aesthetic, we chose the gold spiral binding, the foil on it. You know, these are choices we made the first year that we wanted to stick with, and it might have been cheaper to do it other ways. And we looked into those, but...
And the, just the time of coordinating and editing with lots of different people, and even working together, it creates more work because we want to run everything past each other, like lots of little details about things that if we were doing it by ourselves, we would just make a decision and move forward. But that's also part of what we've enjoyed about the work too.
Yeah, and I think our visions and our styles are really compatible and complementary and bring things that we wouldn't have on our own.
Yeah, and different. So we had a lot of things to also compromise and talk through and work out between us. But it, I think we both really, I really value the ways that we have done that and worked through conflict and harmonized and... learned from each other and deepened our relationship through the project. And then you had this idea to do a podcast this summer. And we had been doing these new moon circles last year, which were really lovely. And they were also a lot of work too. And so we were like, maybe the podcast would be a way to promote it and less work, which is totally not true.
Totally not true. Just a different kind of work, but actually probably way more work.
Way more.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we have so many contributors that we've worked with who we can call in as guests on the show. Like, we can keep doing the show for years. And I feel really excited and committed about the podcast. And I also have wondered how well it translates to be like the planner when we're in a podcast. Like, not everyone who listens to it uses the Indwelling Dreams planner. So maybe that aspect of the podcast will be phasing out of being a talking point as much. But the other thing is that, and that I just also want to name and why we aren't doing it again, is that it's been hard to sell. And, you know, last year we had a thing happen where we printed 1,000, sold out in like 2 weeks, and had to order more, and it took over a month to get more, and people were like, where's my planner? And so we were like, okay, this year we're just going to order 2,000 straight up, and that's how it's going to be. And then we still have 800.
Yeah, over 800. Well, no, probably around 800 now. Yeah,
so it's now on sale for $18, and it's amazing.
It is amazing.
I think the art on the cover has been a little bit of an issue. I don't know if you want to...
Yeah, but before the Roe Wade stuff came into question, we had already designed the cover and...
Which has a fetus on it.
Yeah, has a fetus on it. And weirdly, neither of us thought about that. Like, we never... Did we even talk about that might bring up a mixed message to people or... I don't know if we did.
I felt so good about it as a like image of creation and promise, and all of us were fetuses at one point, and it's about indwelling, like just the sacredness of life in our bodies. But also, like, we are obviously fully pro-choice.
Yeah.
Like, so it didn't even occur to me. It really didn't. And then,
well, the first version was a dragon fetus. Yes. And then we were like, wait, like, because we, it wasn't a dragon.
It was a ziz.
Yeah. Which is a Jewish mythological creature. So,
like, about to hatch from its egg, but we were like, I don't know if this is gonna read like indwelling, like something that's already in us, like,
and it's like not at all
cosmic.
Like, yeah, it's not at all like a commonly known like story or anything. So it was a bit of a reach. So we were like, okay, and then we got to the fetus. But then it became a thing because people who didn't know us or our politics, any advertising we tried to do didn't come across because I'm sure
people are like,
fetus, no.
Yeah.
But I'm like, fuck you, pro-life people, for taking that beautiful image and making it be
something people are triggered by.
Yeah.
Because it's used violently.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing is that our anti-Zionist politics have gotten a lot more explicit. Like,
And I think part of our anti-Zionist politics keeping it a little less explicit was a strategy, too. Because we wanted to introduce people who might be kind of on the fence to, hey, this is a perspective on, you know, Israeli militarization and the colonizing of Palestine that you may not have thought about before. And here are voices of the diaspora that you may not have listened to before, but you might be interested in the moon and magical things. So here's this planner. And we definitely got emails of people being like, I hate your planner. I didn't know it was like against Israel.
And that's what pushed us to then form an alliance with JVP and then be like, okay, fuck it. Like, we are just going to have to be really explicit. And, you know, and more of our contributors were also like very clear about their politics in their pieces. And so, but that's also meant that like places that were interested in covering or carrying our planner then said no to us.
There were a few people from the first year who carried it wholesale who didn't after that. And there were a couple media outlets who wanted to write about the planner. And then when they found out the more of the anti-Zionist content, didn't want to write about it. As you and I were both in our 40s now, and I first got politicized about Palestine when I was 20. From Simona Sharoni and Therese Leba and people at Evergreen. And in recent years, as things have gotten progressively worse, there's this awakening that's happening in our world right now since the uprisings and the pandemic. There is more Palestinian solidarity and more Jews really understanding that you don't have to be in allegiance to Israel to be a Jew or consent to that framework, and that the media actually has been manipulating all of us since the formation of Israel as a state.
Yeah. I've learned so much through doing this podcast already. Just, I mean, I learned a lot from all of our contributors by working with them on their pieces, but then having the opportunity to have these conversations where it's like, how were you raised? Like, what's your Jewish life like? And I'm just learning so much about how much has been squashed into trying to create this monoculture connected to Israel.
And whiteness.
And whiteness. So there's so much possibility in the embrace of Jewish peoples on a global level.
Part of this podcast is about building community, and the topics that we cover are not popularly talked about in Jewish space. And also, we know that in the fringes, there are lots of these conversations happening. And I think part of my intention, my work in the world in general, is that these fringe topics and values become the center of conversation of Jewish life, of embracing diaspora, of embracing the diversity of diaspora, centering Jews of color voices, disabled Jewish voices, queer and trans,
queer, non-binary people,
and watch what unfolds and how things can change and how solidarity with people outside of Judaism who we want to support their work, how that can change our world.
We've also talked about writing a book and hope to be able to do that at some point. And we might, I mean, I would love to do the planner that we have in our hearts and dreams. We just have to work out some of the financial and labor and workflow and those kinds of issues to be able to make it possible.
If anyone listening out there wants to be an angel donor, we accept your donation.
Depending on what you want in return.
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks for listening if you made it to the end. And we are excited to keep offering the podcast out in the world. And we really hope that if you enjoy it, you'll support our Patreon. Even if everyone who has listened to it gave $2 a month to our Patreon, we'd almost cover our costs. Yeah, and please rate and review our podcast on whatever platform you listen. And
yeah, that would be really helpful. I don't think anyone has rated or reviewed it yet that I know of. I never do for podcasts I listen to, but they always ask. And now I am asking you.
But that, I think that helps the algorithm so people can, it comes up on their thing if they're interested in Jewish podcasts.
Oh, remember we got a notice that after our very first episode, we learned that we were number 13 of all Jewish podcasts in the U.S. and number one for Jewish podcasts in Sweden.
Just goes to show there aren't many Jewish podcasts. So
I do listen to a number of Jewish podcasts, and that we would be number 13 after releasing one episode is a little surprising. But if you're a connoisseur of Jewish podcasts, I'm curious what your other 12 favorites are.
Thanks, everyone, for your support and for listening to our spiel.
Yeah, thanks for listening to our spiel.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, and the next episode is for Shavuot with Socket Klatsker. We're really excited about that one, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye. Dreaming alive.